Infrastructure, the great enabler. Whether it's HS2, new bus and rail networks, 5G, or even, at least for some, free ports, infrastructure commitments and public funding brings the potential for private sector investment, homes, jobs, and much more besides. In the early weeks of this government, it's already clear that the Prime Minister believes it, and we can expect firm cash commitments to follow soapbox promises come next month's budget. One of the places that should benefit is the Oxford-Cambridge Arc. Last month, ministers announced a preferred route for the central section of East-West Rail, a development that could unlock homes and jobs along much of the route. More than that, though, it is a commitment to this vital innovation corridor at a time when there has been more talk than action from Whitehall and Westminster. I'm Damien Wilde, Editor-in-Chief of EG, and over the next 30 minutes we'll be discussing how the Oxford-Cambridge Arc can best capitalise on this development and what else it needs to thrive. And I'm joined by a glittering panel to discuss this. Ian Gilby is partner at Pinsent Masons, Alistair Kratt is director of LDA Design, and Jackie Sadak is chief operating officer at UK Regeneration. Jackie, can I start with you, and can we just test that infrastructure theory before we get into some of the detail? Is it a given that public investment in transport always drives private sector capital?
Well, it's pretty much a given. I mean, obviously, we can all point to white elephants, but I have to say, last week's announcement on HS2 will drive an incredible new push for inward investment right along that route. It's almost like catnip to inward investors. And I think it's the greatest thing that's happened, really. And thank goodness, after all that shilly-shallying around, we've had the right announcement. I think ditto on Oxford-Cambridge. I think the right bits of infrastructure will always attract the right investment. What I think people are really looking forward, inward investors are always looking for, is a bit of certainty. And if you've got a bit of certainty and public commitment, public sector commitment, government commitment, I think you've got all to play for.
You talked about shilly-shallying around HS2. There's been a bit of shilly-shallying around Oxford-Cambridge as well. Are we moving closer to a position where that investor confidence will flow through?
Well, let's hope so. I mean, the market has always been very keen on the Oxford-Cambridge corridor. I mean, far more keen on it than the government, if the truth be known. I mean, the market's been quite titivated by it for some years. And we've seen a distinct lack of leadership and lack of governance and lack of ownership of it, really, by government. And I have to say, those of us that were going through some quite bleak moments a few weeks ago were utterly relieved to see that the route had now been announced between Bedford and Cambridge, because even though, you know, it's a very odd decision, it's a slow bit of route and all the rest of it, at least it now means there's a bit more certainty around the project happening. Doesn't mean that it's committed, Damien. You know, we've still got to have the government announcement that they are actually going to make the commitment and make the investment that we need. But it does mean that we're a step further along. And I have to say, in my bleak moments, I really thought we were in trouble on Oxford-Cambridge. We've lost the road, and I really thought we might lose the railway as well, on the basis that it was too southerly and looked too elitist, if you like, because it was connecting two elite cities. So the fact that we've even had this crumb of comfort is something that I've latched on to in with absolute alacrity, and continue to talk about wherever I go, talk it up, because this could be a game changer, provided we don't frame it in the terms of routes and, you know, engineering and train times and all of that, provided we frame it as an economic growth project, something that's about the knowledge economy, something that's about homes and jobs, not about tearing up people's gardens and destroying wildlife. It's got to be presented in exactly the right way, and the narrative has got to be got exactly right.
So provided we've learned the lessons of HS2, you might say.
Well, indeed. And you couldn't have made much more of a Horlicks than the way that we've presented that to the public. So, you know, let's hope we can get this bit right. Because actually, at the end of the day, it is quite a hard sell. You've got two university towns there that have existed in splendid isolation for the best part of a millennium. You know, why would you want to connect them? Well, I can see the reason. You know, you want that knowledge arc. You want that triangle, you know, the London, Cambridge, Oxford triangle enshrined. But, you know, you have to present it as an innovative knowledge corridor, not as something that's going to be for the convenience of middle class parents who might have a child at each university. It's got to be presented in the right way.
Okay, well, we'll come back to much of that. But Alistair, could I start with you? Have you had bleak moments, and are you out of them now?
I have bleak moments every week. But I think with regard to the announcement with HS2, massive relief. I think that it is going ahead. I think organisationally we believe it's a really good thing. But I think what is interesting about the government's announcement is that they want more out of the station development opportunities, that they need to be more accountable than merely just terminal points for people travelling. They want greater economic return. So I think whilst that throws elements of HS2 into question regarding the station designs particularly, what it does demonstrate, I think, is that government want more out of investment opportunity than merely servicing infrastructure. I think when it flips to the ARC, the situation there, I think, is that it has been very much infrastructure-led in terms of the narrative to date, just going back to what's already been said. The issue there, I think, is that it needs to be good growth-led, and the infrastructure needs to be strapped around it. And I think with the probable demise of the expressway, certainly to the west, with it being opened up to review right now, government didn't have to review it, but they've undertaken to do that. My hope is that the expressway does fall away and that we end up with a much more local connectivity response, and that that is based on good governance of settlement growth that's properly planned and for the right reasons. So I think a more accountable strategy that isn't purely infrastructure-led, the grand project, I think is the best way to go, yeah.
And sacrificing the expressway would help that. That would help frame the argument in the right way?
I think so. I think the grand motorway expressway concept, even generationally, is out of date. I think we're moving into an era now where alternative forms of transport, but also how the whole economy works with digital economy, the need to actually be able to jump into your car, maybe with the exclusion of cargo and logistics, but certainly the extent of roadway that was going to be required and not even connected to a spatial strategy to justify its alignment, mainly constraints driven, was no way to properly plan for the generation coming forward.
Okay, thank you. And Ian, Jackie and Alistair, they're confessing to some bleak moments. Are you a glass half empty or glass half full person on this today?
I'm definitely glass half full, but, and there's always a but from a lawyer, in March 2019 we had the government response to the NIC report, and at that time momentum was building. Lots happened in the last year, Damien, and I suppose a concern I have, if I am just being slightly realistic for a moment, is that the political agenda over the last 12 months has been informed by two big headlines. Firstly, getting the B word done, and secondly, the levelling up agenda. And my fear for this project is how it fits into the political agenda, which has got to be dominated by levelling up. We've already seen a piecemeal attack on HS2 because of quite understandable concerns that the London to Birmingham link, which will be delivered first, won't actually assist government in its levelling up agenda. And whilst I agree with Jackie and Alistair that the Oxford-Cambridge ARC project is critical to the success of the UK, I'm not sure how it fits with those big macro political statements that are being made by Number 10 and Number 10A, as we now call the Treasury. So I'm really interested to see how government frames this going forwards, actually, because on the one hand, it's a massive, great big golden goose, potentially, and on the other hand, it doesn't quite fit within that political framework, which we see government now trying to drive forward. So I'm interested to see whether the momentum that was generated by the March 2019 response continues, or whether we lose a bit of momentum this year, which I think would be regrettable.
And to Jackie's point around framing that argument, it's not just the government who needs to frame the argument, perhaps to suit that political agenda. It's on this industry as well, and local authorities and other groups as well, isn't it, Ian, that argument is framed to suit perhaps a levelling up agenda? Or do you just not think that that circle can be squared?
Well, I think government set out its own agenda back in March, and there was both a call to arms to those various public and private stakeholders that you talk about, Damien, but there was also its own action list set out in a sort of next steps part to its document. And government promised that it would set up a business chair forum, a new advisory group, and a host of other government-coordinated groups, which at the moment haven't been constituted. So the top-down approach to this, I think, has slightly faltered. I think where we are seeing leadership is amongst the 31 local authorities and the four LEPs who are working in a coordinated way to try and realise the benefits of the bigger idea. But I think there needs to be some top-down as well as bottom-up.
Okay, thank you. Jackie, no one knows Whitehall in this industry like you, having spent quite a bit of time there. Do you think that this agenda or the ARC's agenda needs to sit very much alongside a government agenda? And if that is the case, can it be made to be part of the levelling up story?
Well, Mr. Gilby is wise, isn't he? And he's absolutely nailed it in terms of his analysis. And, you know, it goes back to my point earlier on. I do think this project is a little bit too southerly, if you like,
not much we can do about that.
And that was the very next thing I was going to say. It's just very sad that we can't shift it along, really, you know, because I absolutely take that point. But I will throw in also, and this doesn't address your question, Damien, but I will throw in also that if this government is going to come anywhere near meeting its humongous, eye-watering pledges on spending on infrastructure, then it just cannot afford to bin off projects that are very well far along in terms of their thinking, as indeed this one is. So they're going to really struggle to be able to point to very much at all in 5 years' time when they go back to the polls, unless they go with projects like this. So, you know, that in a way kind of gives me a little bit of comfort. The route announcement gave me a little bit of comfort. Grant Shapps on Andrew Marr yesterday gave me a little bit of comfort. I do feel that there is a willingness to frame infrastructure projects in terms of economic growth. I would like to see this project particularly feature with, I don't know, stuff like a Hyperloop, the digital stuff, you know, how much cabling we're going to put along this railway line as we put in the rail, what else are we going to put in alongside? All of those sorts of things, I think, would help to sell the project. Exactly how much we can push this towards a levelling up agenda, I would really struggle, if I'm going to be honest. And as you know, I can generally turn a political argument out of most things. But, you know, I at the end of the day, this is, I mean, I've started to talk about our own site in Biggleswade as being in the South Midlands, of course, you understand. But this is irretrievably in the southeast of England. And all I will say is, it's, you know, the big argument for it, I guess, is the national economy and how much this is needed in terms of the national economy. And at the end of the day, you know, the levelling up, I've been in and around the devolution debate for years. I couldn't be a bigger and more violent, vehement supporter of devolution into our cities and our regions. I'm not sure about levelling up as a formulation. You know, I'd rather see places empowered. But at the end of the day, London is still the powerhouse of our economy. And if London's a problem, it's a problem that other countries would kill to have. So at the end of the day, if you want to rebuild our economy post-Brexit, you are going to have to feature with this golden triangle of London, Oxford, Cambridge, whilst pushing all the rest of it. Do not throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Thank you. Alistair, you were nodding along there, and something struck me. A government's agenda can't all be around one policy, whether it's getting Brexit done or whether it's levelling up. And by the mid-2020s, it's committed to delivering 300,000 homes a year. Yeah. Those homes can't just be anywhere. They need to be in places where they're needed, and they're very much needed in this region. Yeah, is that something to capitalise on?
Yeah, I think, I mean, whilst I'm no politician, I think part of the agenda for the Oxford Cambridge Growth Arc is levelling up east-west. I think there is a risk that Oxford and Cambridge were always going to overheat, and part of the reason why connectivity was always part of the agenda was to establish affordable housing within reasonable commuting distance by sustainable, hopefully sustainable transport means, to allow those economies to continue to blossom. So I think underpinning it with the correct narrative, there is definitely a levelling up, and some of the wider economies, Bedfordshire and Northamptonshire, which are by no means the same economic performers as other areas on the arc, these areas do still need assistance and the opportunity to flourish. In terms of the real need for housing, absolutely, it needs to be provided where people need it. But I think the important thing is if the narrative and the reasoning behind the arc and people being able to live in areas close to but not within the hinterland of Oxford and Cambridge is going to become real, the places cannot just be planned on the same basis that new settlement planning has been undertaken over the last few decades. If it's going to be globally attractive, if it's going to draw the right people and diverse communities to establish them for these places, not just to become satellite communities, but genuinely places where people will live and grow up, then it needs proper planning. Government have moved towards guidance on beautiful placemaking and other things. That's not necessarily going to ensure that good stuff does happen. I think the risk that the ARC still faces is what is the spatial plan and why are we going to grow some places and not others? And if we can't grow certain places, where a new place is going to be developed? And we know that large land holdings and options are being agreed right across the ARC based on hope value. But that is no way to plan good growth. And I think this whole agenda, if the houses are going to be built in the right place and supported by the right infrastructure, we need to have a plan that works. I think the local enterprise partnerships are very well geared up to deliver the industrial strategy. That's their mindset. I think there is less strategic planning in place to deliver housing in the right places with the right mindset. And I think in the absence of government doing top-down, I think we need to make sure that the local authorities and probably empowered by the local enterprise partnerships need to be empowered around some common vision. Certainly within the joint declaration in March, there is some form of vision defined in the early stages of that document. That could quite easily be fleshed out with some principles that all authorities who have a spatial responsibility could certainly sign up to and continue to plan well. I think the challenge I think the ARC has always faced is that government have not wanted to intervene in the local plan making process to deliver the additional housing. The joint declaration came up with some approaches to do that, but we know even within Oxfordshire, where I live, that South Oxfordshire has pulled out of the growth strategy, with the whole idea being to pull together in a united way to agree what the spatial plan should be for one end of the ARC. So the inability of local government in some areas to actually be able to coordinate themselves and agree a united position, I think, remains a challenge.
Okay, thank you. And Ian, you wanted to come in there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just echoing really what Alistair was saying about the need for there to be a top vision on this. On a much smaller scale, when we're planning new settlements, urban extensions, garden villages, there's something that needs to happen, and it's called equalisation. Because there's hard choices that need to be made, and some landowners will be asked to bear an infrastructure burden, and some landowners will benefit from getting economic development focused on their land ownership. But if we're not going to just string a series of pearls of localised development between Oxford and Cambridge with no joined upness, with no joined up thinking, then we'll end up squandering this once-in-a-generation opportunity to create something akin to the Silk Road in England. We need to create something with a big vision. And a big vision comes from somebody leading this from the front. And the two things that we're missing at the moment are a national policy statement to provide a framework for those hard decisions to be made. Some landowners will lose out, some landowners will do well, but ultimately everybody will gain, and that's a difficult agenda to run. The other thing that we're missing is a high-level governmental sponsor. We need a minister for the ARC. We're expecting, aren't we, to see a minister for HS2, maybe even a minister for levelling up. Well, I think we need a minister for the ARC who is going to stay in place for more than a year to help deliver this, because there's some hard choices. What's going to happen is that the quick wins around development will come along. Land values will drive development in attractive places. There will be parts of the ARC which will be much more economically attractive than others. But ultimately, if this is going to be of benefit to the whole ARC and to the whole country, then those difficult decisions need to be made relatively early on in the process. And my concern at the moment is that all of the stakeholders will be unified by an idea, but will ultimately have to make sure that they're looking after their own interests. And this is too big a project for that to be the key driving factor.
Jackie, a minister for the ARC sounds ambitious. A minister for the ARC who stays in post for more than a year sounds fanciful, doesn't it?
Well, we did have a minister for the ARC, didn't we? We had that very nice man, Mr. Stewart, who was the MP for Milton Keynes, who basically, after a little while of doing the job, decided that he wasn't powerful enough to be able to command the cross Whitehall alliance that he needed to be able to deliver. Bless him. I think he was quite honest and quite robust about it, actually. But Ian's right. We haven't had an announcement on who on earth's going to be the government lead. At one point, way before the general election, it was going to be the Chancellor. Well, obviously, that's gone by the by. We'd like to see some top-down leadership, please. We'd like to know what happened to that business leader, the business chair that was advertised for several months ago. That all went dead on us. We don't know what happened to that. I joined the boys in thinking that, you know, in their analysis that the LEPs have stepped up, and I think all four LEPs have been admirable in the way that they've grasped the agenda. I'm not sure that the housing agenda has been grasped in exactly this. I think Alistair's right about that. There's an aspiration for 1 million new homes along the Oxford-Cambridge corridor. How are those going to be delivered? Ian talks about, you know, how he would rather have the Silk Road than the String of Pearls. I'm so ground down, I'd settle for the String of Pearls. In fact, to be frank with you, I'd settle for one or two pearls just strung along a bit of string along there, because at the moment I can't see, you know. And you know, I'm a renegade from the Thames Gateway. You know, I do know that these things are very, very difficult to coordinate in a properly planned way. But Ian's right. The opportunity to do a properly planned, clean, green series of communities along a knowledge arc is far too good an opportunity to waste. And somebody with some pizzazz and some inspiration and some vision and some imagination should step up and lead this thing. And whether it's 22 local authorities or 31 local authorities or 38 local authorities involved, it will be like herding cats. You've got all of them and the LEPs, but it's not that it can't be done. You can only look at the London Stansted Cambridge corridor to realise actually a consensus can be pulled around, a partnership can be pulled around a corridor against common objectives. These people in London Stansted Cambridge have been working together for years and years and years, simply along the improvement of the track up to Cambridge, up to Stansted, forgive me, and beyond to Cambridge. You know, very, very limited objectives and a very, very good partnership. What we've got here is the other way around. We've got massive objectives, a massive opportunity, and very little in the way of partnerships or structures or governance on the ground. We're crying out for that.
And that pizzazz, that person with pizzazz, is that a minister and a business lead? The two people with pizzazz required?
Well, in an ideal world, you'd get the both, wouldn't you?
You'd take one, though.
Well, I mean, it goes back to the point about, you know, is it a Silk Road or is it a String of Pearls? I'll take whatever I can get, frankly. But in an ideal world, you'd have a government lead and you'd have a very, very authoritative business person who was involved in the patch, corralling the private sector interest and the inward investment interest. And I think that would be a very, very powerful proposition.
And what does this mean for you, Jackie, as a developer, as an investor in the region, as all the as you see the objectives, you see the need, but you see a lack of commitment there from government? How does it affect what you do on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis?
Well, the plain answer is it doesn't affect what I do on a day-to-day basis. I'm still ploughing through, trying to get my site allocated for housing, putting in an application, trying to get an application passed for housing, dealing with my local community and all the rest of it. And on the top of that, any East West Rail announcement is a nice to have. And I am working through, you know, the neighbourhood plan process with Biggleswade Town Council, and I am, you know, steeped in it really, and in the trenches, you know, wading through all of this. So on a day-to-day basis, this doesn't make a huge amount of difference whatsoever. On a macro business basis, of course it does. And I will say this, my fellow landowners along the Oxford-Cambridge corridor, and I'm not going to mention names, are far more in mourning about losing the road than they will let on. Actually, all developers, all landowners along the East-West Rail route, along the Oxford-Cambridge corridor, all wanted the road as well as the railway. You know, I'm kind of slightly different. You know, I fancy myself as a market disruptor. I'm trying to do a zero carbon settlement. I wasn't too troubled about the road. I was thrilled that we got the announcement on the railway. It's still 5 miles from my site, even though I am firmly in the middle of the Oxford-Cambridge corridor. So how we link to the East-West rail is another another thing that I've got to wrestle with. But on a day-to-day basis, it doesn't make that much difference. And I think you'll find that those of us that are on the chalk face, you know, actually don't have the bandwidth really to get too bogged down with whether this, that or the other. We've just got to get on and deliver what it is we can deliver locally and hope that somehow, somewhere, a magical thing will arrive whereby we get Ian Silk Road and we can actually join in with that project and be part of it. Everything I'm doing, you know, we have qualified to be a garden community. We've got Housing Infrastructure Fund from Homes England. We are working through the neighbourhood plan. We are trying to disincentivise the use of the private car. Everything I'm doing would chime with the aspirations of the Oxford-Cambridge corridor. I'm just waiting for something that I can be part of and I can belong to. I'm looking for a family to belong to.
Yeah. Okay. And Ian, you talked about how this arc, this region could resonate when the government's agenda is perhaps facing in a different direction. But there's a third in the top three leading government agenda points. The third strikes me as sustainability. And there is an opportunity here, isn't there, for the ARC to be a beacon for that and suit a slightly different agenda.
Yes, I think that's right, Damien. I mean, when we had our debate at the Francis Crick Institute at the end of last year, the natural capital aspects of this project were up there front and centre. And I think as Jackie was saying in terms of her project, embedding that zero carbon approach, being respectful and supportive of the natural capital which is going to be affected by development through the route is absolutely critical. You only need to see the events, the very difficult and sometimes tragic events of the last few days with flooding through the UK to know that we can't ignore the interface between built development and its natural context. And it would be great, in fact, it wouldn't just be great, it's imperative that this is an exemplar economic zone for natural capital and sustainability and growth going forwards, both in terms of the kind of minutiae of the way in which projects are built, but in terms of the connectivity. And whilst I can see Jackie's point about economic imperative around having a new expressway built, I also have a great deal of sympathy with Alastair's perspective that actually building a new road in the corridor is perhaps seen to be slightly more 20th century than 21st century at this stage. So I think investing some, you know, best-in-class thought on sustainability, embedding zero carbon from day one, really embracing that natural capital agenda, and actually leaving more natural capital than is taken as a result of this project, I think, has got to be the way forward. And we can set out our stall to the world on that basis and be an exemplar project for Europe and beyond, particularly bearing in mind that, you know, obviously the UK needs to be signalling its intention in that space with the Glasgow conference later in the year.
Brilliant.
Alistair, do you think that's well understood and seen as an opportunity that can be capitalised upon?
I mean, I think the natural capital agenda, the whole strategy towards moving towards a minimum of net zero, if ideally not net gain, is a really important matter. I think government is live to it. How it applies to making the ARC, which isn't a geographic, well, it isn't a place at the moment, but in terms of something that unifies it geographically, planning something in a coordinated way that balances environmental outcomes with development aspirations is a necessary part of what we should be doing. I think the opportunity for the ARC to actually define itself by, as Ian was saying, by something more credible than just pure infrastructure planning, but predicated on actually what could that landscape and that natural environment actually take, and how could you develop a geographic region that is defined by its environmental qualities, is absolutely on the button, I think. And I think government policy and certainly advisors who also spoke at the earlier conference at the Crick earlier last year, you know, signpost towards that. So I think for me, a lot of it is turning the words into drawn components, as I think I alluded to at the conference. There's a lot of policy, but not very much drawing. And I think the idea of establishing what a master plan in its wider sense, what a strategy would actually look like, and going back to the needs of developers who have land interests and are seeking to develop, even strategically a call on sites to draw in the best in class developers who are out there securing land interest, and actually develop a coherent strategy around coherent development proposals, and actually stitch the infrastructure around the aspirations and the needs, and find that balance ultimately between environmental outcomes and commercial return. At the moment, most projects are still predicated on a single project providing the infrastructure to serve itself. And going back to one of Ian's earliest points, that process needs to change. And the only way it can change if things are more comprehensively planned. So there needs to be a route map to how we actually move forward. If the government aren't going to do top down, there needs to be some form of interaction agreed between developers and local authorities to strategically pull together and come up with a plan that's going to deliver the right outcome.
Okay, we're almost out of time, and I want to finish. We've done another podcast on this region very recently as well, and I'll ask you a similar question to the one I asked of guests there, which is what would be your number one priority for the budget? We thought we knew when it was, but we assume that it's only a few short weeks away. Jackie, you said earlier you'd take what you were given, but what would you like to see?
Well, normally in the run-up to any budget predictions, I'm always blazing the trail for infrastructure spending. I'm now amazingly conflicted in that I am a British taxpayer as well as wanting a lot of infrastructure. And I'm a little bit alarmed, if you like, by the power grab out of number 10 last week. And I really, whilst I'd like to see a lot of spending on infrastructure in a properly planned way, I'd really like to see us obeying the fiscal rules while we're at it. So my big plea would be for infrastructure spending. But I have to say, I would really like it to be done responsibly and properly.
Thank you, Ian.
For me, Damien, I'd like to see some funding for a supra-regional body to help make those difficult decisions which we were talking about earlier. Let's create a new corporation. Let's have the Oxford-Cambridge Knowledge Corridor Corporation or some such thing, which is going to make those difficult decisions for us as we try and balance sustainability on the one hand and economic growth on the other, and be an exemplar for UK on the world stage.
So discipline, a new body, and Alistair from you?
I would echo Ian's comments. I think some form of corporation to unite planning and thinking is where we need to go. I think we need to demonstrate that for single investment we get multiple outcomes, and that's going to be the only way, in my view, that we can deliver that. So wise investment for multiple beneficial outcomes.
Okay, that's a good positive note to end on. We'll be coming back to this topic repeatedly, not least around the budget at some time in March, and at MIPIM as well. But for now, Ian, Alistair and Jackie, thank you for joining us.